episode of Magic the Amateuring.
Yeah, I'm one of your hosts. My name is Megan. I'm a turtle.
I'm another one of your hosts. My name's Maria, and I'm a flying squirrel. Welcome to our show. Megan and I are both magic amateurs. We started playing magic about 2 years ago, and we're here to pass on our knowledge and lack of knowledge to you, the listener.
You may be wondering, how do a turtle and a flying squirrel play magic without opposable thumbs?
I would say, what a joke. I have skin flaps that I use to play my cards with.
I would say I just play with all of my cards face up.
That's it.
I push them around. I push them around my flippers.
What kind of decks do you like to play, turtle? I suppose really dirtily decks?
I do like to play dirtily decks. I'm just a dirtily turtle.
And I like to play mono flyers. Because that's what I do. I fly around and I get in people's chimneys.
God damn it. Squirrels in your chimney. Now there's a magic card that needs to be made.
Squirrels in the chimney?
Squirrels in the chimney.
What was the latest one that was like a whole bunch of squirrels that it made so many squirrels?
Was it Squirrel's Nest?
Yeah.
Am I just thinking of Hornet Nest? I'm putting the word squirrel in it instead. You poke the squirrel nest, squirrels come out.
That's so adorable and disturbing. Like when you poke a nest of ants. Oh, God.
Ants come out, man.
On today's show, we've got a special show for you. We're going to be talking about something we have not actually spent any time talking about on the show ever before. What do you think it could be, Megan?
Is it olives? Because I hate olives.
I hate olives, too.
Oh.
BFFs.
Well, it's not olives.
No, it's not olives. It's actually Legacy.
What?
Yeah.
But Legacy is terrifying.
I know Legacy is very scary, and that's why we're going to talk about it. So we make the, you know, people are scared of the unknown, Megan.
Yeah, or you know what they say, face your fears.
Yep, except if your fear is your own face, then I guess you're going to have a real problem.
What? Then you just look in a mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Just a suggestion.
Oh, God. We're also going to dive deep into the MTA mailbag and answer a listener question and talk about some sealed action as well as PPTQs, our plate, as they say, runneth over.
If you didn't believe in mirrors, you could also have, like, a face-off type situation where you have future scientists put your face on someone else's body.
John Travolta's?
Yeah, sure, that works.
That's whose body I want my face on. Just somebody who is sort of washed up, but, you know, it was in Greece. Those are my requirements.
Hey, he's been in Hairspray.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was disturbing.
Maria.
What?
Who's that?
I didn't hear anything.
Didn't you hear that?
No.
Maria, there's definitely someone else here.
I cannot see nor smell any other human.
Maria, the call is coming from inside the house.
Oh my God! What Megan's trying to say is we have a special guest this week joining us.
Oh, so you do hear that?
Yeah, I felt it. Okay. There's a disturbance in the force.
Gotcha. It's, you guys, today, this week on the show, we have a former guest of the show, Matthias Hunt.
Hey guys, how's it going?
What's up, Matthias?
Not too much. Got back from New Jersey covering a Legacy Grand Prix today.
Oh.
That's right. We don't know jack shit about Legacy, so we brought in someone who spent all weekend talking about it to talk about it more.
I was kind of hoping the show was actually about olives, because I know that neither of you guys like olives, and I'm actually a huge fan. So if the show was about olives, I would get to have a lot of olives.
Matthias, I have to say that you said it so many times right now that I'm going to have to ban the O word from this point on in the show.
Can I still say orgasm?
Yeah, you can say that.
Oh, good, because I was planning to say it a lot in this episode.
I was talking about the other O word.
Oh, okay. Oh, right.
Yeah, you guys know the one.
So, question, Matthias, your preference, black O-word or green O-word?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I actually didn't like olives.
No, until what? About, you can't say the word.
I didn't like, all right, until about 2 years ago. And then I just the green ones right now. Black ones are okay. I guess you could put them on pizza. They're one of those things that you can put on pizza where it doesn't really change what the pizza tastes like. So if it's good for you, sure, you can put it there, but I won't pick them off.
I think you are so wrong in that assessment. They definitely change the taste.
It makes the pizza so much worse. Maybe it doesn't change the taste of a terrible pizza. Because then it's like, oh, this pizza was already terrible.
Still terrible.
Oh, still terrible.
I think we need to call in the listeners on this. Tweet at us at MTAcast if you have an opinion on the O word. Yay or nay. Whoever gets more votes will be the ultimate winner in saying whether they're good or not.
Yeah, and the winner will have to buy the loser will have to buy the winner a pizza with or without the O word, depending on the results of the poll.
Perfect. I love this idea.
All right. It's a deal.
Does anyone ever get a pizza with just that on it? That seems like it'd be really weird.
I hope not.
That seems bizarre.
Like, you know how sometimes you can get, it's like a base price for a pizza plus one topping?
Right.
That seems like the biggest waste of that one topping gift. You get one topping and you pick that?
What would be worse? I can't think of anything worse.
When I see tomatoes as one of the options, it's like, oh, you're going to have your one topping pizza and you're going to pick tomato. It's like, that.
Yeah.
It seems like you're not understanding how this game works.
I don't know. Like, fresh tomato on a pizza could be all right.
Like a margarita pizza?
Yeah, that's real good. All right, you guys. We need, for the noobs. Let's get some info for the noobs.
Sure. Let's do it.
Legacy. Holy crap. What is it? Just baseline, Matthias. What is Legacy?
All right. Legacy is probably one of the oldest Magic formats. It used to be called Type 1.5 if you're really old school, but then they since gave them sweeter names. Like, it was Vintage was Type 1 and Legacy was Type 1.5. Okay, anyway, what does that mean?
That sounds like a D&D manual, you know what I mean?
Well, the idea was that in Vintage you could play anything, so that was Type 1. And then they're like, wait, that's a bad idea. There's some really broken cards that you shouldn't be allowed to play. Black Lotus, for example, is one of those cards. And there's about 50 of them, you know, around the years of Magic a lot of them involve anti, some of them are just really stupid, that they said, okay, you can't play these cards, but you can play anything else. So then they're like, all right, this Type 1 minus those cards is Type 1.5, and it's since been renamed Legacy. So you can basically play any card that's been printed in Magic with a few exceptions.
Wow, I didn't know there were 50 exceptions. I actually thought the number would be lower than that.
I'm seeing it a little high. I would have to look at the list. I'm guessing it's somewhere around the 30 to 50 range. You have to remember there's a lot of cards that, like, there's anti-cards,
for example.
I think there's about eight anti-cards in Magic. You can't play any of those. There's also some cards involved, like Chaos Orb and Percet, and you had to pick up the card and you'd throw it onto the table and things it would land on would die. So cards that involved Dexterity, those are called. You can't play those.
Dexterity? What a weird way to use the word dexterity, just by throwing a card on a pile of other cards.
Hey, some people are really dexterous at throwing cards on other cards.
Well, if Chaos Orb doesn't flip over at least once, then it doesn't destroy anything, actually.
That's why I think,
you have to practice throwing Chaos Orb.
You would have to use it in, like, feature match, because you'd need an instant replay on it to make sure it flipped a lot of the time, I would think.
I mean, it's like a coin. You can usually tell when a coin has flipped.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Anyhow, it leads to really stupid things, like people putting all their lands in different spots, and anyway, you can't play any of those, and then you can't play basically the biggest mistakes, but anything else is fair game.
Just really quick, what is anti for people who don't know?
Well, way back when Magic was designed, they thought that it'd be fun to have every game play for something. So after you shuffled your deck, both of you would take the top card of your deck and you'd flip them over, and those would be the anti cards, and the winner of the game would get both of them. So you'd actually start, you know, you'd always be playing for something so that your collection would be changing as you played more. I think it's because when they envisioned the game, they never thought that people would just go out and collect tons of cards. It'd more be like, hey, I'd buy a deck and you'd buy a deck, and we'd play a couple of times, and so that our decks never got too old, cards would sometimes switch from my deck to your deck. And then, you know, the game would always be a little fresh. As it turns out, people hate losing their own cards. So this is pretty much, this was done away with really quickly.
Can you still play with Auntie in Vintage?
So there's some people who play just Alpha only. Like, they try to play original Magic, and they'll play for Auntie.
There are 73 cards on the Legacy banned list.
Oh, wow. So more than 50.
Yeah. It obviously features a lot of the hits. Ancestral Recall, Black Lotus, all of the Moxes. Those are all in there. A lot of the original demonic variations. Demonic Attorney, Demonic Consultation, Demonic Tutor. Basically don't get advice from any demons.
Yeah, basically the kind of cards you can't play are ones that let you make too much mana, like skip the one land per turn thing. Tutors, by and large, things that let you go through your deck and pick out any card. A lot of those are banned. And then a lot of cards that draw seven, those tend to be banned.
Whoa.
Turns out you can break that if it says draw seven. So tell us about what are some of the decks that we see around Legacy these days.
So I guess before we start about what the decks you'd see, I kind of want to say, well, what happens when you get to play what the thousands and thousands of different Magic cards?
Yeah.
It turns out that over the years, if you pick cards from a lot of different sets, you can do some really, really powerful things. Some cards work very well with other cards. If you watch the Legacy Grand Prix this weekend, and I'm already going all the way of like the most powerful thing you can do, the very first game, the player who went second won on the first turn. Now, that's pretty rare for Legacy, but it kind of shows the point that you can do that. Like, decks are capable of doing this. Like, I was playing a deck with zero lands in it, 60 spells, and he wins on the first turn. And it's a very fragile deck, but when all the stuff comes together, boom, you just win the game.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Crazy.
Crazy, right? So keeping in mind that people can do that, those are called the unfair decks of Legacy, a lot of them, you know, or your combo decks. And they all tend to do something pretty broken, or sometimes they use a different resource, like Dredge casts all its cards out of the graveyard. So then you get to have the decks that are, you know, playing an honest game of Magic. They're casting their spells. And those are actually the most popular decks of Legacy. But you have to keep in mind that... So this deck, this zero land deck that wins on the first turn, right? You can stop it by just playing one Force of Will. Usually they lose the whole game if you play it. So a lot of people, they don't want to play this really gimmicky deck. So they have to put Force of Wills in their deck. So most decks that cast their spells, with a couple exceptions, tend to be blue in Legacy. Because one, you can play Force of Will, and two, if you were to have a greatest hits album of Magic, probably almost all the tracks would be blue cards.
That sounds like if Picasso made an album.
Yeah, it was definitely in its blue period.
Okay, so the appeal of Legacy, then, for people who play it, is the fact that you can either do something really stupid and crazy, like win on turn one with a no-land deck, or you can just basically go through and play Magic's greatest hits and have a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing with the most powerful cards in Magic, and it actually turns out that when you play Legacy, almost all the cards in your deck are going to cost about 0, 1, or 2 mana, and that's just because the games you need to play so many spells in the first couple of turns because what everybody's doing is so powerful. You have to have lots of options. You don't really have time to, if you're going to play something that costs 4 or more mana in Legacy, it had better win the game right away when you play
it. Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, actually every card that costs 4 or more in Legacy pretty much wins the game if you resolve it. There's like a couple exceptions, but I mean, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor doesn't actually read win the game, but he's pretty close. Like, if I cast Jace and you don't kill him right away, you probably are going to lose.
So do you find commentating... So you do commentary for SCG, Star City Games. Do you find commentating on Legacy fun because of how different it is?
Well, I think Legacy is really interesting in that there's a lot of play to each game. It really rewards people who have practiced Legacy. There's a lot of decisions as early as turn one of the game. So... there's a lot of different lines. I think you really can see people who put in a lot of practice do well at this format. I think the danger of Legacy is that because of how many cards there are, the format really doesn't change very much.
Right.
Legacy changing a little bit now because creatures are like at an all-time high. In the last 5 years, we've printed the best creatures Magic has ever seen. So the creatures that people play in Legacy are actually pretty good, and they're newer cards. But all the spells, like your counter spells, your kill spells, your brainstorms, those are all cards that have been around for 10, 15 years, and they're probably never getting any better, because cards like Brainstorm are pretty, they're just too good. And I think Wizards has since learned this, and they're not going to print stuff like that anymore.
Right.
But you were asking what to expect when you go to a Legacy tournament. So
What am I going to see around?
Yeah, the two biggest decks you're going to see are, you're going to see control decks, which are tend to be blue and white. They'll have a lot of counter spells, so cards like Spell Pierce or Force of Will. And the way they win the game is they either use Stoneforge Mystic, which is a 1/2 for 2 that when he comes into play, searches up an equipment, and it can also put the equipment into play without casting it, so it gets around counter spells, and you'll sneak a Batterskull into play, and you'll tend to win that way, because a 4/4 is actually really big in Legacy, because it's bigger than most 1 and 2 drop creatures. So these control decks will play lots of counter spells, removal, and then maybe a Stoneforge Mystic, or they might play the card Counterbalance. Instead of trying to kill you with damage, they might just try to counter all your spells for the rest of the game.
Oh, every single one?
Yeah, Counterbalance is a card that's not actually that good in formats that are not Legacy. It's kind of funny. It's a 2-mana enchantment that when I play something, you flip over the top card of your deck. And if your card you flipped over and the card I played costs the same amount of mana, you counter my spell. Because every spell in Legacy basically costs 1 or 2, this thing is really good.
Wow. That's got to be, I don't know, annoying to play against?
Well, yeah. I mean, the deck that plays it also plays Sensei's Divining Top, so they actually, when you play a spell, they'll switch around the top 3 cards of their deck to put the correct one on top to try to make it match your spell.
Oh boy.
So they're not even playing it fair. You know, it's not random. They're going to... That's your control. So you'll see some of that at Legacy Tournament.
Okay.
And the other big card you'll see is Delver of Secrets. And this is a card from Innistrad. It's actually a pretty recent creature. It's a 1/1 for 1 blue mana. Then if you, the top, at the beginning of your upkeep, if the top card of your deck is an instant or sorcery, this guy permanently becomes a 3/2 flyer. And they will play that guy or maybe Young Pyromancer. They don't play too many creatures. They'll get one of them out. And then every time you try to kill it, they'll try to counter your kill spell, and they'll try to counter your spells for just enough turns to maybe make you take, you know, 10, 15 damage, and then they'll finish you off with lightning bolts. So they're this really big tempo deck that tries to just, like, sneak 20 damage at you before you can play.
That sounds fun, actually.
For a while, it's been Legacy's best deck. And while it didn't win the Grand Prix right now, it was all over the place. Most of the pros decided to play a blue-red version of this deck.
What deck took it all home last weekend?
So Brian Bronduin won the Grand Prix. He was playing a Stoneforge Mystic deck. It was blue, white, and red. It was a Jeskai Stoneforge deck. It was pretty similar to the thing I described before. It has Stoneforge Mystic. It has, I believe he was playing Young Pyromancer, and then 2 cards, copies of True Name Nemesis, so only about 9 creatures, and he played a lot of counter spells and removal, and that was enough to get him there.
Wow. Interesting. Very interesting. So are there any other interesting decks? Like, do you have like an anecdote or two from Grand Prix New Jersey of like you saw something crazy? You saw something awesome?
I mean, we got to kick it off with a turn 1 win, which is awesome. The cool part about Legacy is that, so maybe there's only like 8 or 10 tier 1 decks, but so in Standard, it's like if you're not playing, you know, I could write a list of about 8 decks. And if the deck you're playing is not on that list, your deck's probably pretty bad. You know, you're not going to beat Obzon with anything but, you know, the best of the contenders. In Legacy, there's probably a list of about 50 decks that you could play that they're not great. They're not Tier 1. They're not Delver of Secrets. They're not Stoneblade. But they are... The biggest thing is that the tier 2 decks are close enough to tier 1 that they can still win games, and sometimes they still win tournaments. And it's pretty cool. There's enough decks that you really just can't prepare for everything. You have to play on the fly a lot of the time. For example, we saw Affinity get played in Legacy at 7-0 in this tournament, and that's something which you almost never see in Legacy. We saw a deck playing 35 lands. That's a control deck seeing play.
What? What else was in there?
Just cards that put lands into play. Actually, that deck's really hilarious. It's good against everything that's not combo. It's great, actually, against everything that's not combo, but it cannot beat combo decks for the life of it.
What does it do? Tell us about it.
Okay, so this is a deck. It used to play... It's called Lands. It used to play about 43...
yeah, come on!
43 lands.
It's called Lands.
Get creative, and, people.
And the card it plays... So the big engines of the deck is you have the card Exploration, which is a one-man enchantment that lets you play an additional land every turn. I know, right? And then the other part of the engine is Life from the Loam, which is this... You might remember it from Modern Masters. It was actually right. In Modern Masters. You play it for 2 mana. You can get up to three lands from your graveyard into your hand, and then you can dredge the card. So you can, instead of... Basically, if Life from Loam's in your graveyard, you can, instead of drawing a card, you can put it back in your hand and mill yourself. And you just keep milling yourself into more lands. So it's like you're drawing 3 cards a turn. And this deck's actually no fun to play against. It's hilarious and really powerful. But they'll play about 2 lands a turn. And the lands they play are like Wasteland, which is a land that sacrifices to destroy a non-basic land. They'll play a land called Reshadin Port, which can tap to tap one of your lands. And they'll use the fact that they're playing 2 lands a turn to destroy and tap all your lands eventually so that you can't ever cast anything. Boom. And then they'll play lots of copies of Maze of Ith so that if you ever did get a creature down, that it Maze of Ith makes it so creatures can't attack you. So they'll basically get this situation where your creatures can't attack and they start blowing up all your lands and they start tapping all the rest of your lands. And then they just sit there for a while. The original version of this deck actually only played like 2 lands that turned into creatures, and once your life was miserable and you couldn't do anything, they would just kill you like 2 damage at a time. It was terrible, but it's pretty funny to think that you could have a deck with 40 plus lands and have that work.
It seems like there's a lot of room for creativity, I guess. I mean, I would never think of a deck like that.
There's a ton of room for creativity. I mean, there's so many powerful things you can do with, you know, every Magic card printed, and you're not going to come up with a new best deck in Legacy. That's not going to happen. But I could tell you, I could come up with a deck that's, you know, my crazy idea that I want to play, and I might even be able to, you know, start 3-0 at a Legacy Open with it, because even the bad decks are close enough.
And they cost about $1,000 to put together, usually.
Oh God, Maria, so much more than $1,000.
Really?
Oh God. How much ballpark figure? Let's just go ballpark figures, Matthias.
Well, a lot of the Legacy staples are going to cost you 3 digits, especially all your lands. So you're going to look at upwards of $1,000 for most decks. And some of them could be well upwards of that. A lot of people like to play Burn, actually, in Legacy because it's cheap. You can build it for about $200, I think. Don't quote me on that. I'm not I can't guarantee that, but it's cheap. And then Merfolk is another deck that's reasonably competitive that you can play for under $500.
So, but there are decks, like, there are decks that are $10,000 plus.
I think so, and especially...
Really?
Probably. The lands deck I described to you is actually very expensive. That one might be up there. That's because you have a...
Holy crap.
Well, it's not totally fair. They have some card. There's like one card in the deck that's about $400.
What's that?
It's called the Tabernacle at Pendril Vale. It's from Legends. It's a land. It doesn't tap for mana. That's what you think lands should do. It's another fun one. It sits around and it makes it so that during everyone's upkeep, you have to pay 1 mana for each of your creatures or sacrifice them. And lands doesn't play any creatures, so that's fine. It's part of the whole, I blow up your lands, I tap your lands. Then you have to sack all your creatures. Lands is really a gentleman of a deck.
I just can't get over that. It's called Lands. It's so stupid.
What else would you call it? All the cards in the deck are lands.
I don't know. I'd call it like Continent or something.
What? That's awful.
You put me on the spot here. Look.
Well, awesome. What if... Supposing a player was looking to dip their toe into Legacy for the first time, maybe an SCG Open is coming their way, and they want to not just play the first day, but they want to give a try to the Legacy half of the event. What would be your number one piece of advice for them?
So if you're going to play your first Legacy tournament, have fun with it. People are going to do stuff that you have no idea what's going on. I actually, when I played my first Legacy Grand Prix, I remember I actually did very well at that Grand Prix. I got top 16 at it. But I certainly played people where they were casting cards, and I had no clue what their deck was doing or what their cards are even supposed to do. I was playing a combo deck, so fortunately it was like when you have a hammer, you just hit everything like it's a nail, and that worked, you know. So then, it's like, oh, I don't understand what your deck was doing, but it didn't matter. I would try to play a deck that is doing its own thing. Maybe try like one of the unfair decks, a combo deck, a burn deck to start with. It'll let you see a lot of the format, and you can go from there.
I especially love about Legacy the fact that you can see some really beautiful decks because people foil their decks out a lot and get a lot of alters done with their cards, which I think is really cool to see.
Yeah, and part of it is because the format is so old, and there are, like Matthias mentioned, like so many people are playing cards that they're never going to print better versions of.
Yeah.
Like, it's worth getting foils of them because it's like you could realistically be playing this deck essentially the way it is for like a decade.
Right. And you get that with Legacy staples. One of the things, you know, like when Jeskai Ascendancy came out, that's why like I went through a lot of work to get the pre-release copies of Jeskai Ascendancy, because like, you know, I might be playing with this card for 5 to 10 years. Like, yeah, I want the nice ones. And you actually see this, that one of the players, Philip Schoeniger, who topped four of the Grand Prix, he's taken it even a step farther. His was one of the most beautiful decks I've seen. All his dual lands, which are, you know, your $100, your three-digit lands, he had gotten them all professionally altered so that, like, they were, you know, the art was all the way through the borders. And it's really stunning just, like, to watch that whole deck get played.
Wow. I would feel so nervous just, like, shuffling it. I'd just be like, he would present it, and I'd just be like, it's okay.
It's weird.
It's fine.
It's weird driving to your event where your deck box is worth more than the car you're driving in.
Ding dong.
Who's there?
The mail.
Oh, are you Mr. McFeely?
What?
Hey, Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Oh, yep, that's me.
He was a mailman. Side note, what a disturbing name for a mailman, or anybody.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, Mr. McFeely.
Just saying, kid show. No. So, we had a listener write in with a very interesting question, and you can do this as well. Just send us an email to magicktheamateuring@gmail.com, or tweet us your question at MTAcast if you have a short question. Mm-hmm. And this one I thought was worth reading on air just because it was very interesting. And we've talked about our friend Dirtle Turtle before, a.k.a. Meandering Tower Shell.
He's a feisty sucker.
Yeah, he's different too, you know. He's unlike a lot of cards that you and I, at least, Megan, have seen in our tenure playing Magic. He's very unique in that when he attacks, he goes into exile and doesn't come back to actually hit anything until the next turn because he's so slow.
That's right.
All right,
he is just a turtle.
He's gone attacking for a turn. You know, you ordered him to go walk across the battlefield, and he's gone for a turn because he doesn't come back right away.
He's going. He's on his way.
So here's
the message we got from Alyssa. Hey, Maria and Megan. First of all, I just want to say I love your podcast. You guys keep my head holes happy when I'm washing dishes, sitting at work, driving, or going to sleep at night. I have a weird question that I thought up while listening to episode 92, where we talked about active treasoning a Meandering Tower Shell. Let's say you have a Meandering Tower Shell on the battlefield along with some other random dudes. Then you polymorphous rush all your creatures into tower shells and attack. What happens next turn? Ooh. So she's wondering, like, you know, because all these creatures, do they just disappear into oblivion, or what happens to them?
Yeah. I mean, they all get exiled.
So we consulted Judge Rob, our judge of the show, and he gave us a ruling for you, Alyssa. Get ready.
Our judge of the show. He listens to our show and he judges it hard.
Yeah. So here's what Judge Rob had to say. They don't lose the ability to come back from exile is the short answer. They will come back attacking as themselves. Tower Shell says, Island Walk. Did you forget that it has Island Walk? Because I just did until I just read this.
No, I remembered. He has Island Walk. I was going to say it earlier, but we were on a roll, so I didn't.
Oh, okay. Whenever Meandering Tower Shell attacks, exile it. Return it to the battlefield under your control, tapped and attacking at the beginning of the Declare Attacker step on your next turn. The at the beginning of Declare Attacker step is a delayed trigger created by the triggered ability that exiled the Tower Shell clone in the first place.
Wait, one more time.
All right, these are straight from Judge Rob's mouth here. Yeah. The, quote, at the beginning of the Declare Attacker step, unquote, is a delayed trigger created by the triggered ability that exiled the Tower Shell clone in the first place.
Okay, I get it. He's just saying it's a delayed trigger.
It works similarly to how Sneak Attack works. The main ability of Sneak Attack puts out the creature and sets up a trigger that then exiles it at the end of turn. Whether or not the creature has an ability is not relevant. So, in layman's terms, Alyssa, your dudes are going to come back attacking as normal dudes, not as turtles.
There you go. Hey, he referenced Sneak Attack, which is in a Legacy deck.
That is in a Legacy deck. It's actually one of the best combo decks in Legacy.
What does Sneak Attack do?
It is a 4-mana enchantment that if you pay red mana, you take a creature from your hand. You don't even have to pay for him. That's actually the key part. He comes into play, and he sneaks into play, and he can attack this turn, and then you have to sacrifice him at the end of the turn.
What? What kind of things do people cheat?
Mostly Emrakul and Gristlebrand.
Mostly Emrakul and Gristlebrand.
Turns out if you annihilate your opponent for 6, it's okay if your guy dies at the end of the turn. Because they took 15 also.
It's also played, it's part of, what is it called? Sneak and Show?
Right, so that's the two ways to get those guys into play. Sneak Attack is the first one, and you can also play the card Show and Tell to put them into play.
Oh, what does Show and Tell do?
Well, you have Show and Tell. You have a class. You pick one of your cards, and your opponent picks one of their cards, and you both bring something to Show and Tell, and you both put each of the cards into play, and then they both are into play permanently. And you have to pick a permanent. You both can bring a permanent to Show and Tell.
Amazing.
That sounds really cool and broken.
Yeah, usually I bring something better to Show and Tell if I'm the one casting the card.
You would hope. One would hope. I have a question, unrelated, but sort of related. So, sure. In the mythos of where we are now, with the current set of cons of Tarkir, were the Planeswalkers off, they're trying to keep the Eldrazi, like, locked up on another plane? Is that the deal?
So, you have to go back to, I know some of this. You go back to Zendikar, I'm gonna mess this up, never tell me about it. Basically, what was it? We know about the spirit dragon,
Ugin. Eugene.
Yeah.
Or as Megan likes to call him, Eugene.
Yeah, Eugene. That's, you know, the U and then Gene. So he and, I believe, Sorin, a long time ago, trapped these Eldrazi inside of, you know, they were just running amok, and they trapped them inside of Innistrad, inside this Eye of Ugin. And basically in the story of Innistrad, what happens is these sealed away Eldrazi break free and they end up destroying the entire plane. Like, the bad guys win, everybody has to run away. It's like Godzilla 1. It's like a Godzilla movie and Godzilla 1.
Wait, on Innistrad?
Yeah. Or Zendikar.
I was going to say, Innistrad is the one that turns out happy.
Right, Innistrad turns out happy. No, you're absolutely right. Zendikar gets destroyed, the Godzilla creatures kill everything, everybody runs away.
So, the reason I bring it up is because you're talking about Emrakul, who is an Eldrazi, notably. And I was just hoping that maybe we can see some more Eldrazi in our future, because I think they're really cool.
I'm going to read you guys a vaguely creepy sentence. The Eldrazi are an ancient race native to the blind eternities that have neither physical form nor color alignment. This is where it gets creepy. Their nature is ceaseless hunger. So they travel between planes, devouring the mana and life energy until the plane's destruction.
Yeah.
That's all.
Badass.
All Eldrazi descend from one of the three Eldrazi titans, Emrakul, Ulamog, and Kozilek. There you go.
It's actually true. There were little spawn tokens that you got when you played this set. It was one of the tokens that came in packs, and there were three different arts, and one of them looked like Emrakul, and one looked like Ulamog, and one looked like Kozilek.
Ah, so they were a spawn of one of those guys.
Yep.
It's like their cute little sperm were running around on your board.
What? No, they're kids.
Oh.
They're
kids.
Well, you actually, they killed themselves. They were zero ones, and you sacrificed them to make a mana.
Sick. Oh.
Wait. They didn't kill themselves, you sacrificed
them.
Yeah,
you'd kill them.
Anyway.
Let's call murder here.
Gotta cast Emrakul somehow.
That's true.
That was a sidetracked, so I apologize for my sidetracking. And anybody out there who is completely confused by magic lore, go and look it up.
Oh, because you know, we never sidetrack.
True. But I'm just like, people who don't know magic lore, they've got to just be like, what are they talking about? So if you would like to know more, you can always go to dailymtg.com, and they have a column that you can read that's like written by an author, and it has, you know, stuff about what's going on in the magic lore universe right now. And so I was just hoping that maybe we might get to see some more Eldrazi in our future, because I want to cast a 15-15, you know what I mean?
We do think Eugene's coming back.
Eugene's going to be there. But the problem is that the next set is the past of cons.
Yeah, so Eugene's still alive.
Yeah, exactly. I know Eugene's still alive, but that means, like, if all Eldrazi were going to be there, that would mean that they would have to have been on Tarkir in the past.
Oh, I get it.
As opposed to going there in the future. But maybe we'll see them in the third set. They'll come in the new future of Tarkir.
Oh, no, they're going to come and eat another plane.
No.
They're so hungry, Matthias, because all they ordered was a pizza with olives on it, and it was a piece of shit.
You said the O word.
Oprah.
They ordered a pizza with Oprah on it.
Now that's worse. That's worse than an olive.
Let's talk about episode 3, Return of the Jedi.
Sure.
I'm not talking about Star Wars, Maria.
No, you're not. Not at all.
It's episode 6, not 3.
Shut up.
Technically right.
God.
Unfortunately.
No one wants to talk about real episode 3.
Nobody does.
I don't even know which one that one is. Phantom Menace, Clone Wars? And then what's the third one?
I like to think that they only made 3 movies, really.
So, episode 3, Return of the Jedi. We're talking about our PTQ saga here.
Yeah, we are. And I would like to point out that I think it's in the third movie, the third abomination that they made, that R2-D2 spits out oil and sets it on fire with little flame jets.
That sounds like something awful that they probably did.
And I was like, R2, jump the shark. And I love R2. And I cannot forgive that. So
it's really upsetting.
Had to get that off my chest. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
So Megan and I have been attending PTQs, sealed PTQs, because that's what we do. That's what we love.
Yeah, man.
Megan's gone to 3 in the last 3 weeks. I've gone to 2. And we're here to tell you about episode 3, the final chapter of our limited PTQ season.
That's right. After this, we're going to close the book on it. We're going to burn the cards. We're gonna dump all the boosters in the ocean like the Boston Tea Party.
The Boston Magic Party.
Yay!
So, except Megan,
all the cards are in the bay. What?
How did you like this PTQ?
You know, initially, I started out and I knew that my deck had some weaknesses, but it also had some pretty cool stuff going on.
Yeah.
I was playing 9 different non-basic lands.
Sweet.
They included 3 different tri-lands. So I had a Mystic Monetary, a Frontier Bivouac. That's how you say that word, by the way, everybody. And a Sandstep Citadel. Plus 6 other dual lands.
Were you full-on 5 color?
I was technically full-on 5 color. But I was actually mostly teamer. all of my spells except for two were teamer.
Okay.
Fell into that, and I would say even the majority of them were green or blue, with some red. But I was splashing a Dune Blast.
You crazy mofo.
I was base teamer splashing a Dune Blast. I also had an Abomination of Gadul in there because I had four black sources. My mana base was 8-8-7-4-3. Which I think is an accomplishment all on its own.
And how did that go for you? Did you find yourself with mana troubles, or were you okay?
You know, no, I never really had mana troubles. I think there was one time when I had a Dune Blast that I really could have cast, and it was both in my hand, I needed to cast it, and I didn't have the mana.
Yeah.
But I played 6 rounds, and for that to only happen once...
That's pretty good.
And I would say the number of times that Dune Blast won me the game on the spot when I cast it far exceeded that.
Right, exactly. You couldn't splash for dead drop this time, though, huh?
I didn't have a dead drop. Otherwise, you know I would have been playing it.
Oh, yeah. I definitely played a deck that splashed dead drop.
Oh, A, B, C, D. Always be casting dead drop.
Every time, fuckers.
Did you just make every time one word?
Yep. Sure did.
Every time, fuckers.
We could go through the whole alphabet.
Yeah. Anyways, other than that, I was playing 9 morphs and a secret plans.
Oh, okay.
Which was a lot of fun. But I didn't... My pool did not have that many kill spells in it, just in general. It was pretty weak. So I had a Bring Low, an Arrow Storm, and then sometimes I sided into 2 kill shots. But that was about it.
Okay.
That was, in fact, all of my removal that I had. Total.
So you were fine, like,
my deck's weakness.
Stretching your mana base to add some more value to your deck.
What?
You were fine stretching your mana base to, you know, add kill spells or things you thought were missing.
Yeah, there were definitely times when I sideboarded in. I once again, similar to last weekend, I had a Polluted Delta and a Windswept Heath in my pool.
Nice.
Those are 2 of my rares, so money. So there were times when I took out a forest and an island and put in a plains and a Windswept Heath to bump me up to 6 sources of white and put in the 2 kill shots.
All right. I guess that might be something that would be scary for some people to do, but if you feel you had the land for it.
Yeah, I really felt that I did, and there were times when it was just like, if I was going to win the game, like, I simply needed more ways to kill creatures.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, so Maria, tell me about your experience. Oh, by the way, I'll just recap really quickly how I did.
Yeah.
Talk to y'all about that. In round 1, I lost to a guy who cast 3 face down morphs, and he incremental growth them, and then as he flipped them over one by one, they were all woolly loxodons.
That is hilarious.
They were all woolly loxodons, Maria. All of them.
I mean, that sounds really good.
And then, see, I was playing Archer's Parapets, 2 Archer's Parapets, and 2 Dragon's Eye Savants, because I was like, do you know what? This holds the ground pretty well. Do you know what it doesn't hold the ground against?
I bet it's Woolly Loxodon.
It is a 9-10. A 9-10, an 8-9, and a 7-8.
Wow, that is incredible. Just staring down 3 yeah. Woolly Loxodons with that many counters.
Yep, as he flipped them over one at a time, by the 3rd one, I was just like, this is going to be a fucking Woolly Loxodon, and I'm not going to believe it.
Yeah.
And it was, and I was like, yep, I don't believe it.
Normally when a creature gets a 1-1 counter on him, you can bring low him, but not if it's Woolly Loxodon.
Not if it's a Woolly Loxodon, you sure can't. And then I won my next 3 rounds, and then I lost rounds 5 and round 6. Both to flyer heavy decks.
You didn't have much flyer ability to deal with them?
No. Again, that was where my deck was kind of weak. Like, I didn't have good... I could hold the ground really well, but if they played a ton of flyers, it was kind of like, well, do I draw all of my removal or a Dune Blast? No, I lose.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah, so how about you? Tell us what was happening in Maria Land.
Well, I ran across a Maria dilemma that I've not been known to not come across before. What I'm trying to say is, it's happened before.
Made no sense. Oh, okay.
And the dilemma is, does Maria want to play a stupid aggressive deck that has tricks in it and can win completely out of nowhere for super fun times and cause my opponent to be like, but what? Or does Maria want to play a deck that is slower and more consistent with, you know, creatures that are, you know, better creatures and more solid game plan? And what Maria does is go with the first deck. But I shouldn't have. I could have built a better deck, so I built a very aggressive Jeskai deck that had Flying Crane technique in it. Which is,
well, that card's sweet.
It's, like, insane, right? Like, what is the deal with that card? And so, I guess I was kind of built... I was kind of, like, looking for... to get all tricky and kill shit and then just get in there with my stupid little dudes. But I should really follow my own advice about building sealed deck, and which is, do not build aggro unless it is really, really, really good aggro. Or your pool just wants to do that and can't do anything else. And my pool could do something else. So, well, yes, I did win completely out of nowhere, including doing 18 damage with Flying Clip Crane technique. that can't save you every time, especially if your opponent has a cancel. So, I should have played the other deck I could have built, which was green-black base. But, you know, I had a good time with it and enjoyed getting those crazy wins out of nowhere. I dropped sooner than Megan did. And so I wish I would have maybe gone with my other deck just to see if I could have had better success with it. But next time I'll be more disciplined. That's my pledge to myself. Be more disciplined about building a deck, because I know that I can do it well. I just think that, I don't know, I guess I kind of gave in to old Maria and didn't listen to all the things I've learned over the years doing this podcast and playing online and practicing, and I just kind of went with my original gut instinct, which in this case was incorrect.
Damn you, old Maria! You go back to the past where you belong!
I know, right? But sometimes as players, it's hard to overcome, like, our propensity. What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, your propensity.
My propensity towards a certain playstyle or a certain deck if I see it laid out in front of me, and I'm like, oh, this would be really awesome. So I guess there's a bit of a Johnny in me, a little bit, because I want to play really cool, weird stuff and have that sort of stuff happen. But I was living the dream. You know, I was trying to live the dream when it was actually just a dream.
So
I actually really like playing aggro in sealed right now in Concentrate.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. I think one of the dangers when a lot of times I see people building aggro in sealed, and this is not to say that necessarily has happened with your deck, but is I think people try to go for like this nut draw aggro deck where it's like, oh man, I'm going to play all these really weak cards, but then these, you know, have these great interactions. I think. What you have to watch out for is, like, there's two, like, you don't want to play creatures that just become irrelevant. So in draft, for example, like, Valley Dasher is a really fine card. It does one thing, right? It goes in your pretty aggressive red deck. You don't want anywhere else. In sealed, it's the kind of card you really want to avoid because your decks just aren't ever as streamlined. And your opponents always usually will have, like, your games are going to go later. Your opponents will have early removal to stop your nut draws more often. So, like, the better way to put it would be, like, you want less Valley Dashers and more Leaping Masters when you play it. Like, a guy who's good on turn 2 and still does something on turn 6.
Okay.
So you want that. And also, if you're going to aggro someone out, you want to make, like, your biggest concern should be your curve. Like, a lot of times in sealed, if I just play starting on turn 2, if I go creature, 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 and then my next turn is 2 combat tricks. It almost doesn't matter what tricks and what creatures I played here. That will beat a lot of people.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about it that way, but you're right.
Right, like even if my trick is something like Swift Kick Defiant Strike, you know? Like, that's not that exciting. But if my opponent maybe missed a land drop or didn't play something on turn 4, like, that one might just kill him.
Absolutely. And the rest of the time, you have to tell your time-traveling past self, who sometimes comes and inhabits your current body, to get the heck out.
That's right, because to tell you the truth, Matthias, this guy was playing some Valley Dashers, and I, you know, as soon as, like, I hear one person say, I mean, I know that card is horrible in the late game, right? But I'm sitting here like, oh, I'm gonna live the dream with this deck, right? No. You gotta check reality. Like, what if you don't have the nut draw, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's actually, like, in draft, the like, triple Valley Dasher deck is pretty good. And it's not that the deck, your draft Valley Dasher deck and your sealed Valley Dasher deck might actually look really similar, but they're going to be different levels of powerful because your opponent's decks are going to look way different. Like, in sealed decks, your opponent's decks have way more rares and uncommons and generally have more removal, and they can deal with Valley Dashers a lot more easily.
Right. Well, speaking of limited, which we have been now for a little while, Wizards recently changed PTQs and how people can qualify for the Pro Tour. And Megan and I had a few words to say about this.
Oh, yeah. So the format recently is about to switch over to a new system of preliminary PTQs, which are being called PPTQs. And these are hosted by stores, by local stores. And the idea is that there are a lot more of them than there were with PTQs. That if you are at home on any given weekend, you would probably have one of these to go to. In your state, at least.
So those happen, and you need to win that event, correct?
Yes. If you win that event, then you get an invite to go to a regional PTQ, which there are several held at the end of each preliminary PTQ season.
Right.
I want to say it's 4, but I could be wrong.
Are there seasons per year?
No, 4. How many regional PTQs each time?
There's a list. It's somewhere around, like, 24 worldwide.
Oh, okay. So then you get funneled into this regional PTQ, and then if there's fewer than 128 players at the regional PTQ, the top 4 gets an invite to the Pro Tour. If there are more than 128 people at the regional PTQ, then the top 8 get an invite to the Pro Tour.
Okay. So this format benefits people who I say are like grinders and trying to get on the Pro Tour, I would think.
Yeah, it benefits people who definitely who want to be playing more often. I think the idea was that it would also benefit better players who would have more opportunities to win these local and smaller events. You know, like right now a PTQ has anywhere between, you know, all the 3 that we've been to, there haven't been fewer than like 150 players at them.
Right.
Which, and you have to just win a 150 player event to get an invite to the PTQ right now.
And that is hard.
And that's really hard. So the idea is that these preliminary PTQs will be a lot smaller, so winning one will be a lot easier.
However.
Yes.
A lot of these PPTQs, which is the dumbest, you know, acronym I could think of, PPTQ. Stores are allowed to choose what format they want to host this tournament in.
Yes, so, and to be fair to Wizards, the reason why they did that is because this is a totally new thing that they're trying out, they want to make sure that stores host events. Because it is taking a little bit of a risk for them. They don't know how big of an interest these are going to be to people. They don't know what kind of draw they're going to get. They don't know what their attendance is going to be like. So Wizards wanted to be like, do you know what? We're not going to impose any restrictions because that will make it more likely that stores are going to actually sign up to do this.
Sure. The problem with that, though, is that Standard is the most popular Magic format, right? I think I feel safe enough saying that. In Minnesota, coming up here, just because that's where we do the show, that's what we're going to talk about, there happened to be 28 PPTQs that are standard.
Yes.
2 which are sealed.
Yep.
2 which are modern.
There's just 1 modern.
1 modern.
Yeah. So the breakdown is 28 standard, 2 sealed, 1 modern.
And that is really sad for someone like Megan and I.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the issue is happening is imagine that you have a movie theater and you can only show one movie and there's like the summer number one blockbuster and then two other things, but you can only hold one movie. Like, okay, well, and what movie are you going to show, you know?
Yeah. Although to counter that argument, there are several stores holding two movies, showing two movies, but they are showing the blockbuster both times. But I definitely get what you're saying.
I thought stores only got one pre-PTQ.
I think there are two stores. There are a couple of stores that I think are holding two. I think. I'm not 100% sure.
I would. Yeah. Okay.
But I think so. Anyways, and again, it also makes sense because there's a much smaller overhead cost for hosting a standard tournament. There's fewer people involved. There's fewer organizational costs. I think they generally, from what I've heard, that you have to have fewer judges. It's just a less messy endeavor. So a lot of stores have opted to go with the standard pre-PTQ. But obviously it's really sad for a lot of people who are devoted limited players.
Right. And only having two chances to play in an event, you know, I mean, who even knows where they're going to be held in the state? Like,
One of the sealed ones is in St. Cloud.
Oh, really?
Even know where the F that is.
Oh, so, I mean, I guess I'm just saying, you know, I really hope that we can figure out a way to get more format variety because people are going to get burned out on playing nothing but standard and they're going to dwindle the numbers at those standard PPTQs, in my opinion. And the two limited ones are going to be a million people and the store is not going to be able to hold them.
Yeah, I do think... Again, like, it sucks because the idea is that you'll get these much smaller events that with fewer people, and then you have to win. You still have to win, but it's a smaller event, and then you get funneled to the regional PTQ.
Right.
But then the problem with these limited ones is, if there's only two of them, how much smaller are they really going to be? And then you have to win that one, and then you get funneled into a regional PTQ.
Right, it doesn't make any sense. It's totally not fair to the limited player, which, like, I don't know if Wizards was like, oh, we want to be fair to everybody. But it makes you feel like you're not valued, I guess, a little bit as a member of the community. And I think limited is such a wonderful and fun environment and great for learners that it makes me sad because I think that newer players often find a home in limited, and I don't want to see that go away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think what's happening is, and you look at like Star City Games opens right now. Companies like Star City Games that make most of their profits on the secondary Magic card market. You notice we always have a standard open and a legacy open, but there really isn't, you know, a sealed deck open ever. They tried draft opens, but they didn't really catch on, and eventually they just got rid of them. From, you know, we have a modern event, a standard event, and a legacy event every weekend. And I think that's because if you're making your money on the secondary market, and this is what I get from talking with a lot of store owners, it's just more profitable to be running a constructed tournament really all the time. So a lot of these store owners are doing standard because standard is more popular than modern. And I think it's possible you could convince them to run some modern tournaments, especially in parts of the, there are some stores where modern is just as popular, if not more popular than standard. But stores aren't going to make as much of a profit for sealed. So if you want to keep sealed as a PTQ format at all, which I really think we do want to, I think Wizards is going to have to mandate it at some point because I don't think stores will pick it on their own.
Yeah, I agree. So I guess to follow all this up, this is all in part a plug for an article that I wrote about these pre-PTQ formats, which will be up on themeadery.org tomorrow.
Today, you mean?
By which I mean today. What? Yeah, by which I mean today, which is Tuesday. So you should head over there and check it out. In it, I lay out a couple of the arguments for why it actually is good for the stores to run limited pre-PTQs, and sort of a little bit also about why I personally value limited as a format.
Perfect. So yeah, everybody head over to themeadery.org and check that out. And if you have anything to say, sign up and you can leave comments on the article. We would love to hear what you have to say. Or you can just do it the old-fashioned space race way and tweet at us at MTAcast.
Absolutely. In the article, I also mentioned multiple times how much I hate the card Siege Rhino. Siege Rhino. Fuck that guy.
What a show, though. What a show we had just now.
It really
now.
Was. It was pretty solid.
We had good times. We had bad times. We had medium times.
We had good times. We had bad times. We had happy times. We had sad times. We had mad times. We had glad times.
Okay, shut
we
up.
Sometimes had a frad time.
Nope. I just want to say thanks to Matthias Hunt for coming on and giving us a schooling and legacy and lending his knowledge about Sealed Deck and everything. I always love having you on the show, man.
Always happy to be on it.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Maria, I wanted to leave you with these parting thoughts about how much you always really want to play your aggressive decks in Sealed.
Okay.
But you know that you shouldn't because it's the best idea. Right. Have we done all of our sign-off stuff?
Well, sure. Let me just say that you can...
say that, and then because I don't want to be interrupted with the... I want the power of my words.
To linger in the air?
Yeah, no, not at all.
Okay. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher, which is an app if you don't have an iPhone. If you eschewed all of Apple's gear, you can download Stitcher, and our podcast is live on Stitcher. You can go to mtgcast.com and find us and a whole bunch of other great magic podcasts to choose from. You can also check us out on themetery.org, just as you can with Megan's article. Send us an email if you have a question, magicktheamateuring@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter. We'd love you to join at mtacast. A big thank you to everybody out there who donated to our Patreon account. That's patreon.com/mtacast. We recently reached a milestone, so thank you so very much from the bottom of our hearts to everybody who donated. If you'd like to get in on that, you still can. Head over there, patreon.com/mtacast. Throw a dollar our way and we'll throw a smile your way. I just thought of that saying. Oh, somebody make me a car salesman. Anyway, those are all the ways to get in touch with us. Take it away, Megan.
All right, Maria, in the words of Marshall Bruce Mathers III, look, if you only had one shot or one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted, one moment, would you capture it or just let it slip? Yo, you better lose yourself in the music, the moment. You own it. You better never let it go. You only get one shot. Do not miss your chance to blow this opportunity. Comes once in a lifetime. Remember that.
Don't miss your opportunity to blow. Got it.